so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Welcome into Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. Coming up just a little later on today's program, the 92-year-old woman who speaks through her provocative paintings. But first, we've got a legend from the world of personal development. Lisa Nichols is the CEO of Motivating the Masses. That's a multi-million-dollar enterprise with a global platform that now reaches over 170 countries and serves over 80 million people. Lisa is a New York Times best-selling author and one of the world's most requested speakers. She's a motivational coach on the Steve Harvey Show and the Today Show. Her nonprofit foundation, Motivating the Teen Spirit, is touching the lives of millions, helping prevent teen suicides and supporting dropouts in returning to school and helping teens reunite with their families. And she's done all of this after transforming her own life from a single mother on public assistance and overcoming obesity and serious health challenges. So let's welcome her from her home in Los Angeles, Lisa Nichols. Lisa, how you doing today?
I'm so wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be with you.
Well, you're kind to say that. And I think we learned something about Lisa before we started to record this interview, because truth be told, we had some technical issues. And Lisa, I saw the persistence in you as you battle through each and every one of these issues in order to get the great video and the great sound that we have now. Persistence has got to be one of your greatest qualities.
Well, you know, my dad said that I'm being a Taurus the bull. He said, when you'd make a decision, it's not a matter of if or when, it's just a matter of how. And what you saw was me embracing my technical awareness and accepting my technical limitations and being committed to have this conversation with you. And I think this conversation that we're going to have probably will speak to, if nothing else, my determination and persistency more than anything.
Well, you certainly don't need me to tell you that you're the real deal, but maybe some of our listeners need me to tell them that. And I say that because all of us who have, you know, these podcasts or a media platform of some sort have people reaching out to us all the time. There's no shortage, Lisa, of people on social media, self-anointed influencers, if you will, experts on personal transformation. And, you know, many of them have never affected transformation in their own life. So let's start there, because I mentioned in the lead-in that you went from being on public assistance, a single mother, to where you are now. How in the heck does one begin? What was the switch that was flipped for you?
Yeah. 1995, I remember it. I remember that moment. There were many moments that added to the momentum and the conviction, but that wake up call. And I don't know how many people I've talked about how they just woke up one day, or how many people I hear, they woke up one day and they got it. Mine didn't come like that. All of my biggest lessons came probably with a painful awareness or with a unwanted moment. And this was one. My son was 8 months and I went to the cabinet to get Pampers. I didn't have Pampers. So I went to the store to get Pampers and I had to go to the ATM first. I went to the ATM to get $20 out and it said insufficient funds, $11.42. And I remember it hadn't hit me yet, until I went home and I wrapped my son Jelani in a series of towels for 2 days. And every time I changed this towel, I felt this hit again. And as a parent, you got one job, keep your children safe and fed and protected. And I felt like I wasn't doing that. I was already on government assistance. I was already getting food stamps and aid. And the aid didn't cover Pampers. And now the part that I have to do, I can't even do. And on the second day of wrapping my son Jelani in a series of towels, I put my hand on his stomach and looked down at his little body. And I said, Mommy will never be this broke or broken again. And that initiated something, Mark. That made me move into no matter what. Do whatever you need to do, no matter what, to leave this mental, physical, and financial and emotional space and move to a zip code of possibility, a zip code of urgency, a zip code of abundance, a zip code of prosperity. I didn't know how to get there. I didn't know what it would cost me. I didn't know who I'd have to hook my caboose to. I didn't know who I'd have to leave. I didn't know anything other than I was done being here and I want to know what that life feels like. Hmm. I just want to touch it. And so that was the moment. And then after that, I quickly read Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. You're probably very familiar with that book. And I couldn't understand a lot of it. I found out when I was 25 that I'm functionally dyslexic. So, and I don't wear that as a label or as a disease or as a reason to sit down. I simply understand my learning style now. So I read 7 Habits of Highly Effective People 6 times to get everything out of it. And then I implemented one thing at a time. And I gave myself permission to take 5 years to implement that book. And that was the beginning of the shift and the change for me.
So for you, it began in the role of a mother at a pretty desperate time. And now that you're in the business of helping people transform, how do you help people that aren't that desperate yet? Or can you help them? And I guess to give you some context behind that, if I may, Lisa, when we were trying to figure out how to communicate with older adults, we posted a single meme on Facebook. It was not a fancy graphic. It wasn't a beautiful person. It wasn't the scene behind you. It was a notepad, and it said, "Note to self, you are not too old. It is not too late." And within 48 hours, that was viewed by 13.4 million people. It was shared 147,000 times and 98,000 people commented. And that was the lesson for me, that this is what we all want to know. I am not too old. It is not too late. But getting people to go from that thought to actually transforming their lives is a challenge.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
So the first is, I love that question. I love that statement. This next chapter is actually your best chapter because it pulls on everything else that you've learned in your previous chapters. So this is your best chapter, and you are the author of your own autobiography, and you are the designer of your own destiny. And when you want to write a story, write the story, and the story isn't over until you put down the pen. And so, like, the power of understanding that and getting people to understand, no matter where your background is from, no matter how amazing it was, or no matter how miserable it was, what does your next chapter look like? What does your next chapter look like? And that you can only write your story, and no one can tell you when your story is over. Like that right there. I lived through that. I've spoken through that. It's why there's so many people that have followed me, because they just want to know, I got the pen, right? I'm still the author, right? I'm still the designer, right? I get to write. I didn't put the pen down, even though this last chapter may not have felt really great. That doesn't mean that the next chapter won't be amazing, because you still are the author. And so my story and my teachings over the years has constantly been, what are we writing for your next chapter? Who are you listening to? Who's your co-creator? Who do you have in the think tank with you? Sometimes you want to write a great chapter, but you got the wrong people in the think tank with you. And are you willing to hook your caboose to someone else's train who's going in the same direction as you, who can see the light maybe a little brighter than you, and they can shine their light back in your direction or over in your direction so that you can illuminate your possibilities more? That's what I spent the next 27 years talking about. Coming from the space that if I can illuminate my life, when I turn my crawl into a walk and my walk into a run and my run into a soar, it was proof in the pudding to me that if I can do it, anybody could do it. And your soar doesn't just happen at 20. It doesn't just happen at 30. Matter of fact, the best version of your soar can happen in your 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s. The best version of your walk, your run, your soar. And so I get excited about having the conversation, because now we build on every other chapter. I write my next chapter sweeter, calmer, more at peace, more at ease, more determined, because I have all the ingredients of chapter 1 through chapter 16. So chapter 17, just feels better. And that's the thing that I love to let people know, especially people over 50, you know, that we're in a season of reinvention. We're in a season of recreation. We're in a season of re-choosing. We get to re-choose the way we look at life. You get to re-choose the way you want to take on a challenge. You get to reinvigorate your soul, your spirit with this chapter's assignment. You get to look at the purpose and the calling on your life in this season of your life. It's not the same calling that you had when you were 25. That calling probably has already been fulfilled, which is why at times we start feeling lost or bored or aimless. It's because we've already checked several boxes and now it's time to create some new opportunity for ourselves on our terms.
Lisa Nichols, you are preaching from the Book of Boulder, and I love every little bit of that. I could take a shot at answering this question, but I'd love to hear you answer it. Can you explain your ability to connect, your ability to motivate? Because the message is one thing, but the messenger is the thing. And, you know, so many people say stuff that makes sense and might resonate, but they don't get the results that you do. Now, what is it about you and your ability to, it just seems to me you are some sort of vessel and it's coming through you.
First, I'm honored. Thank you for seeing that. And number one, I show up to understand first and then to be understood. Show up to understand and then be understood. By the way, not mine. I got that from the book I read when I was 25, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, written by Stephen Covey. I still carry the lesson forward. Number two, I own my leadership, but I do servant leadership. So I come to elevate. I come to exalt. I come to find the diamond in you that may shine a little brighter because we're in each other's presence. I come to illuminate the lights around me. And in that, my light illuminates. I walk into a space and I ask, how can I add value to this space? Even if it's through video, even if it's online, even if it's virtual, even if it's through the internet, whatever space I show up in, I show up to connect to the energy and the vibration that you give off and that we are in a dance. I show up to not ever have a monologue with someone one way, but to have a dialogue. And I've learned that I can have a dialogue even when the person I'm talking to isn't necessarily saying words, there's an energy exchange. You know, I've gotten a lot of compliments and I'm grateful for all of them about my ability to connect with people. But also, I gotta say, I've done the work on me to not be afraid to allow my soul to be seen. I've done the work. I'm not perfect. I'm a work in progress. Lord knows I am. But I've done enough work on me and my self-awareness to be comfortable in my transparency, comfortable in my vulnerability. And I believe that we all go back to childhood. You show me yours, I'll show you mine. You show me your heart, I'll show you my heart. You show me your vulnerability, I'll show you my vulnerability. You show me your dreams, I'll show you my dreams. I believe we're all like 6-year-olds wanting to play with each other and really inspire one another. So I show up not to dissect you, but I show up to infect you with who I am in the moment and inspire you. I speak to inspire, not to impress. And so there's intentionality in my showing up on social media, on a stage, in a book, in an interview. There's intentionality. And my intentionality is, can my soul connect with your soul? And I'll put mine on the table first. And then you choose.
Man, I love every bit of that. It is easy to see why Lisa Nichols is one of the world's top personal development gurus. We will continue our conversation with Lisa in just a minute. And later, we'll visit a 92-year-old abstract expressionist in her studio to watch her in action and learn what motivates her to keep on keeping on. This is Growing Boulder. The new 65 Plus Selfie Photography Contest is now open. Growing Boulder and Humana are on a stereotype-smashing mission to change the way the world views aging, and we need your help. Send us a selfie photo pursuing a passion you love. More information at growingboulder.com/new65contest. All entries subject to official rules and regulations. We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Boulder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live. Welcome back to Growing Boulder. I'm Mark Middleton. We are talking today with Lisa Nichols, who's the CEO of Motivating the Masses. And I shared with Lisa the fact that Growing Boulder hosted a spiritual roundtable in which we brought together an imam, a rabbi, a reverend, and a Buddhist teacher. And since every religion has some version of the golden rule, I asked Lisa the very same question I ask all of them. Why can't we all get along? Why does it seem like hate is winning?
Wow, that's a loaded question. And let me begin with the end. I do believe that I have a responsibility in contributing to the solution. And I wake up every day and I'm willing to do my part. I won't be able to do it by myself, but I must do my part. One, I believe when we talk about the solution, there's too many of us standing on the sidelines, assessing the problem or complaining about the problem, but we're not in the conversation. I always say you can watch a football game, but it looks a lot differently than being on the field getting hit. You know, the defensive line feels a lot different when you're not in the stands yelling, telling the guy he could do better. And so I am a believer that we are all a part of the solution. And if you're not a part of the solution, guess what? You don't get to be a byproduct. You're actually a part of it not working because we're not working. We're not talking. I believe that courageous conversations need to occur. I take my hat off to you for having, you know, leaders to the table from different religions to find out we can always see what's different. It's very easy to see what's different. I'm a Black woman, you're a white man. We can see the difference, but can we go further? And will we be willing to do the work to find out, one, to celebrate the difference? That if we were alike, this world would be boring. It would be gray. If we were all gray, it would be boring. It's in the diversity that the deliciousness lives. I'll say that again. It's in the diversity that the deliciousness lives. And in that, it's honoring different aspects, but also having courageous conversations to say, I don't need to think just like you. I just need to honor the way you think. I need to honor the humanity in you. When I wrote my first solo book, No Matter What, I remember chapter 4. Chapter 4 was about my faith. And in chapter 4, I remember starting chapter 4 and I was nervous because I knew I needed to speak in my faith, that my faith has been a large part about getting me to where I am. And I can't deny my faith, but I didn't want to offend anyone. And I didn't want to call it the wrong thing. And I remember at the first part of the chapter, I just said, listen, I call him God. You call him whatever you choose. I'm not here to impose my belief system on you. I'm simply here to honor that we all get to have one. And I felt like I took a deep breath. So hundreds and thousands of people commented on that one paragraph that said, I appreciate that you honored who you, what your faith, but that you also gave room for mine. You gave room for me to fit. Part of the solution is, can we give room for each other to fit in the conversation? That we don't live in a universe of absolutes. There's nothing that's absolute, never, ever, always. Never, ever, always are dangerous. And the moment it's only this way, it gets funky. It gets ugly. It gets restrictive. Can we sit at the table together and honor each other's dignity and celebrate each other's difference? And can we be willing to all have one goal? Let's make this world as best as we can make it. I believe that I am the beneficiary of people like Dr. Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela and Mahatma Gandhi and Mother Teresa and Cesar Chavez. I am benefiting from their courageous walks. And can we commit as a culture as the human race, to do our part to make it better for those who are coming after us. I believe that that's the highest goal. And if we can lean into that, and it may not be all of us, but if enough of us can lean into that and be outrageous and be radical and be unapologetic, sometimes having a revolution for what's right isn't about being quiet or too polite. I believe that right needs to also have its place in the world. And sometimes those of us who are conscious and aware and awake and we want love, we whisper it. And sometimes the whisper is required to get bolder, may I say in your words, and stronger and unapologetic about its stand. And I just think that we're in that climate. And luckily enough, people who are watching this podcast, we've lived long enough to have enough evidence in ourselves of what's right. Can we just combine? We don't have to always agree, but can we combine our superhero and super shero powers of voice and conviction to speak for humanity? I'm a crazy believer that we can do it. I know you know me, Mark. I'm radical, but I live in radical. I believe we can do it, but I don't believe we'll do it on the sidelines. And I don't believe we'll do it whispering. And when I say not whispering, I don't mean yelling aggressively, but I do mean owning our voices and becoming a unified voice of diversity, a unified voice of the human race, a unified voice of what's right, what feels good. And we don't need a lot of evidence in the now of what's right. We can go back 60 years and just ask, what were they fighting for? Because it doesn't look a lot different. So you asked me, you got me.
Oh, I'm glad I asked you because you're speaking directly to me. Let me ask you this, Lisa Nichols, because you notice that I'm a white man and I've noticed that you're a black woman. And, yeah. You know, we talk a lot about ageism at Growing Bolder. And as a black woman, you have had no doubt to encounter sexism, racism. And as you age, if you haven't already, you certainly will encounter ageism. Have your battles, to the extent that you might have had them with sexism and racism, made you stronger to confront the ageism that is rampant in our culture these days?
I think that isms are always painful and dangerous and excluding. And isms are a result of ignorance. And I'm not trying to call anyone stupid. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying you make decisions to exclude people for the most part, if it's inside of an ism, based on what you don't know or based on what you're assuming by them. It's a blanket opinion of people, of a bunch of individuals, and it doesn't allow individuals to emerge. And so isms are always genderism, ageism, racism, you know, any of the isms can be just absolutely unkind. And I haven't addressed as much ageism, but when you were talking, I'm sure I was excluded, but I didn't know I was excluded. And I started saying when I was 31, for me, I only want to play with people who want to play with me. And I said that because people wouldn't choose me at the time because I was a woman or because I was a black woman. At that time, it was those reasons. And I knew it. And in some cases, they told me. And now I say it again. I only want to play with people who want to play with me. And then I follow it with these four statements. I have nothing to prove, nothing to protect, nothing to hide, and nothing to defend. I don't want to hide my age. People say, don't you wish you were 28 again? No, not at all. I really enjoy my 58. I enjoy everything it brings. So I don't want to prove that I'm good enough, even though I'm over 50. I don't want to hide that I'm over 50. I don't want to try to protect it, and I don't need to defend it. I get to own it. I get to walk in it. I get to celebrate it. I get to celebrate the miles in which I've come. So when someone, I do get comments about me. It's very interesting when someone finds out my age and they go, oh my God, you look good for this. I go, what other way should I look? What other way should I look? Have you seen the 58 years old? We look amazing. Like, what other way should I look? So people always say, oh, you look good for your age. I'm supposed to. It's the right age to look this way. Like, I don't think I'm doing good. I don't think I'm doing good in spite of being 58. Hmm. I think I'm doing my best because I'm 58. So I invite people to look at aging and my age and from a different viewpoint. Like I bring more to the table because I'm 58, not in spite of being 58. So if you don't want to have that wisdom at the table, that perseverance, that determination, all those thousands and thousands of hours of problem solving at the table, then it's not the table for me to be at. And so I really have learned, probably through racism and through genderism, that I only want to play with people who want to play with me, and I don't have to convert people and convince them that I'm valuable. I get to show them my value, and then they get to choose. And I get to sleep good at night with either one of their choices.
We are talking today with one of the world's most in-demand speakers and motivational experts, Lisa Nichols. And coming up, Lisa will share the keys to finding your passion and purpose. And she's got a special invitation to her upcoming online workshop where you can learn how to be a better communicator, a powerful speaker at no cost. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
The new 65 Plus Selfie Photography Contest is now open. Growing Bolder and Humana are on a stereotype-smashing mission to change the way the world views aging, and we need your help. Send us a selfie photo pursuing a passion you love. More information at growingbolder.com/new65contest. All entries subject to official rules and regulations. Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. We are talking today with Lisa Nichols, who's a legend in the world of personal development after she transformed her own life from living on public assistance to the CEO of a multi-million-dollar company that now reaches 170 countries. Lisa describes herself as a disruptor, so I wondered, what exactly is she disrupting?
Anything I can. No, anything that doesn't elevate us as individuals inside of a collective journey. I want to question any ism, any limitation, any box. I tell people, you think you're playing out of the box, and I want you to challenge, there never was a box. Someone said, oh my God, you're so out of the box. And then we immediately said, there's a box. I want you to challenge everyone and anything around you to say, there isn't a box. There never was a box. We get to just play in the universe. We get to just be all we could be. We get to press reset 1,000 times. We get to love who we want to love. I want to disrupt anything that shrinks my spirit. I want to disrupt anything that shrinks the way we love, shrinks the way we expand, shrinks the way we think about earning money, shrinks the way we manage our health. You know, the idea that Black women are a huge amount more likely to have diabetes. I want to disrupt that. Hold on. I was obese for 19 years of my life. I was morbidly obese for 4 of those years. I had 6 blood transfusions in 3 years. I had an emergency hysterectomy and an emergency gastric bypass. My doctor said, it's not a matter of if you're going to have a heart attack. It's a matter of where will you be when you have one. So now I'm a health influencer. Why? Because I refuse to live that life and I wanted to disrupt that story and then be even more disruptive and at 58 become a health influencer for primarily women and men over 50, but anybody who's dealt with weight, who's dealt with health issues. I want to be a disruptor to go, just because that was your diagnosis doesn't mean that will always be your diagnosis. So you name it. And I want to disrupt it if it's limiting.
And here's the good news, folks. For those of you listening today, if you want to get disrupted by Lisa Nichols, and really, who wouldn't want to be, there's an opportunity. And I can't believe it because it's free, it's live, it's a 5-day It's called the Legendary Speaker Challenge coming up in September. Lisa, what can you tell us about the Legendary Speaker Challenge? Because I think people understand now that they've listened to you why you are one of the most in-demand speakers in the world. But I think in this day and age, everybody needs to work on their ability to communicate at some level. Is this really for anybody?
Yeah, and this is not for speakers. This is not for platform speakers like me solely. There'll be a few of them there. This is for anyone who wants to use their voice to do more good in the world, period. If you want to use your voice to create more impact, use your voice in written form, in video form, in live form, in print form, in podcast form, as an educator, not even as a brand here, but in your work as an attorney, as a nurse, as a teacher. Anytime you want something to feel better, go further, be more impactful, the first thing that you want to learn is how to be an impactful speaker, how to deliver the message, whether it's a message to one or message to 10 or message to 100. How do I do it in a way in which it moves people to want to create change in their life, from a patient to an audience, whatever it is. And so I want to spend this season of my life, I believe I'm in my legacy years. I'm not sitting down for another 10 years, but there's a time where I'm going to sit down. And in these last 10 years of really working this way, I'll work another way. Then I'll do most of my work in ministries, in villages, in different parts of South Africa. I know how I'll work in 12 years from now, but for these next 10 years, I want to give as many people as I can the superpower of connection, the superpower of impact, the superpower of being unforgettable when you open your mouth. And then you choose what you want to use it for. My job in this season of my life is to give you the skill sets, the unconscious competence that I turned into a conscious competent skill set, and the framework and the system to make you more impactful. Because when good people are able to do well, good people do more good in the world. And we need a lot more good in this world. And so I want to teach and give my contribution, which is how can you be riveting? We've seen people in our society move forward who shouldn't move forward because they were the most powerful and impactful speaker. And I want to give more good people that power.
It's coming up in September, folks, and we will share this link with you. But as I understand it, it's motivatingthemasses.com/growingbolder, and you can register for free and you can learn. You can learn from the great Lisa Nichols. Lisa, you also say, I'm obedient. What are you obedient to?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so what's funny is people always relate the word obedient and surrender to weakness. But I've learned over the last probably 30, maybe 35 years, more focused, 26 of those years, that my obedience and my surrender are my superpowers. So to unpack that, like you asked, I'm obedient to the calling on my life. And as I mentioned earlier, your calling and your purpose will morph and change, expand and grow and graduate. So I'm obedient to what is it that I should be doing? What are my gifts? What are my talents? What are my skill sets? Or what are my lessons that I should be teaching? Now, here's what I mean by obedience. The moment I get that answer, and by the way, to me, praying is asking for clarity, and meditation and stillness is being quiet enough to hear the answer. It took me years to figure that out. But when I'm still and I get the answers, a lot of times my head kicks in and I start discounting that I could do that, or that I should be doing that, or that anybody would want to hear me do that. And so obedience is saying I'll climb over the discomfort to live my life fully because you gave it to me. I'll climb over the inconvenience of being ostracized, the inconvenience of maybe losing 10,000 followers, the inconvenience of walking alone because no one gets your vision, recognizing that if no one gets my vision, if no one gets your vision, I'll speak to you. If no one gets your vision, it's because God didn't give your vision to anybody else. God gave your vision to you. And whatever your faith is, recognizing that there's a vision that I've been given and it unfolds and only I can birth that vision. Your vision can only come through you. And if you don't do you, you'll never be done. And that vision will die with you. Whether it's a vision to help kids, it's a vision to write one little book that becomes a big book. It's the vision to help people find their voice. Don't measure or compare your vision with anybody else's vision, because that's what we have a tendency to do, is go, well, mine is nowhere near as big as Oprah's. Mine is nowhere big as Mark's. And obedience is saying, do the calling that I have on your life. It's not about it being easy. It's about it being necessary. And so I'm obedient because that also protects me. I call him God, not here to impose my belief system on anyone else, but I read really early on that I will never leave you nor forsake you, or I won't make a fool of you. And so I go, okay, if I don't let my ego get in, I don't let my shego get in, Mark, and I don't start doing it for the wrong reason, for the money or for the accolades or the popularity, but I do the thing that I'm supposed to do because it's the right thing to do, then I probably will have some heavy hits, but I will always get up because I was promised if you're obedient. And then the other part is surrender. Surrender, I surrender and go, use me, even though I'm scared and I'm exhausted at times. And I get lonely at times. I don't want to sit down on the calling on my life. Use me. And I'll say yes. Sometimes a quick yes. Sometimes a neat teeth chattering yes. But I'll say yes, and then I'll go find the people to help me get it done.
Lisa, I think you've touched on this several times in this conversation, but help me with something, if you will. I like to say, and prove me wrong, that Growing Boulder has done more interviews with active nonagenarians and centenarians than any media company in the world. And they're as diverse can be, which is great news for all of us. But there are a couple of common denominators. And one of them is that they all still have passion or purpose, whatever you want to describe it. It doesn't have to be something profound. It could just be they have to get up and feed the cat every day. But they have passion and they have purpose. And research shows us time and time again that it is passion and purpose that keep people engaged and happy and healthy as they age. But everybody asks, okay, I don't have a passion. I don't have a purpose. You, my friend, are one of the world's great experts on the art of personal transformation. How do people get started? How do you take the first step toward finding your passion or purpose?
So I think number one, there's a lot of unhooking as an opportunity, because oftentimes we're hooked to someone else's passion and we unconsciously begin to compare what we don't feel we have to what they have, like someone's passion to, you know, save the whales, that feels big. Number one, unhook to anyone else and allow yourself to uniquely and individually discover what brings you joy. What brings you joy, and how would you like to see the world a better place because you were here? Don't think about the how. The other reason why most people can't find their passion or their purpose is because you look at the how too soon. I don't know how to do it. So if you look at the how too soon, it will shrink wrap your passion. It will shrink wrap your purpose. Because most of us who are living in passion and purpose, we didn't know how much it would cost us when we started. We just got into it and it kept going. And so as the passion and purpose grew, we became clearer on how big the how really was. So number two, don't get caught up on the how before you get sold out on the what. And so what brings you joy? Ask yourself these questions. What makes you happy? Or what do you feel has to be helped? Sometimes it doesn't come from a rah-rah emotion. It comes from a pain. I started motivating the teen spirit because I didn't want any other teen to be as sad and lost as I was at 17. It started from a pain. I was suicidal at 19, and I have an amazing mom and an amazing dad, and I didn't want any other teen to feel that lost with a supportive environment. So I launched Motivating the Teen Spirit. 27 years later, we're now doing teen summer camps for 5 days for families and teens. And so what do you feel needs to be impacted? What's a problem that needs to be solved, or what's a desire that deserves to be birthed? ask yourself questions, not what's my passion and what's my purpose. Talk about the world, because my is too much about you. You'll end up lost all the time. No disrespect, but you compared to humanity isn't a big enough topic. But if you go, what change do I want to produce in the world? What do I want to activate? What do I want to initiate? What do I want to leave? That's big. That'll get you chewing. And then don't look at the how you're going to do it. Just what do you want to do?
Lisa Nichols, you came to play, and I am so grateful for that. Thank you so much. You know, all because Jelani didn't have a diaper for a couple of days. Look what you have done. Look what you have gifted to all of us. Lisa's live 5-day legendary speaker challenge runs from September 9th through the 13th. And in it, Lisa will share how to become unforgettable, unapologetic, and unleashed. And you don't have to be a professional or a public speaker to take advantage of this, because, you know, these days we are all speakers, we're all communicators, and who doesn't want to become better at that? Amazingly, there is no cost to this 5-day challenge. For more information and to register, just go to motivatingthemasses.com/growingbolder. We'll be right back to meet the 92-year-old artist who is tackling important social issues with her provocative paintings. This is Growing Bolder. We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Bolder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live.
Hi, I'm Rowdy Gaines, 3-time Olympic gold medalist. I talk a lot about goal setting because to me it's really important. You have to know where you're going in order to get there. You need something to focus on or you'll get lost along the way. But don't become so focused on the destination that you forget to enjoy the journey, because that's what makes you who you are. How you treat others along the way, how you respond to setbacks, how you use your successes to build momentum. Here's something I've learned from my decades in competitive swimming. Those who don't enjoy the journey, the practices, the traveling, the time spent with teammates, are the ones who rarely, if ever, achieve their goals. But those who savor the process, those who realize that the journey is much more important than the destination, those are the ones who end up on the podium.
Always good to hear from and learn from my pal, Rowdy Gaines. Thanks, Rowdy. You know, I recently visited 92-year-old painter Jean Banus at her home studio and then accompanied her to her one-woman exhibition at a local gallery. Jean paints with passion. She creates bold pieces that take on provocative themes like sexual abuse, social justice, and war. Jean Banus is a 92-year-old abstract expressionist and a major surprise to many critics and collectors who make the ageist and sexist assumption that these paintings were created by a much younger man. I'm guessing when some people see your paintings and they don't know who you are, they might be surprised when they see that it is this 92-year-old woman that is responsible for this dynamic, energetic painting. True?
So that was a big surprise. It never occurred to me that my paintings were strong enough that people felt that a man painted them, that only a man could paint very strong, dynamic paintings.
Banus works quickly with multiple brushes in each hand and on two canvases at one time.
At the beginning, I really paint fast, but then after that, I think a little bit more and add the paint on. And the painting speaks to me. Sometimes I want to do my own things, but the painting says nope.
Scrubbing, rubbing, layering, and looking until it's finished or forgotten. She's not afraid to push a painting too far and then have to start over.
Yes, in fact, that's what Picasso said. Paint until you totally destroy the painting, then you're ready to start painting. So I often do that. I get frustrated sometimes, and I just have to sit down and relax a little bit and decide what I want to do next.
And when you're at your best, Jean, do you feel like you're removed from the process and the creativity is just flowing through you?
Absolutely. I totally get lost in my work. So I don't ever want anybody to disturb me when I'm painting, because it takes me 5 minutes maybe to get back into the where I am interiorly while I'm painting.
I've disturbed you. I apologize. Back to work.
Oh, no, that's okay.
Baynes doesn't paint what she calls pretty pictures. She's a non-objective artist whose work increasingly has an objective.
I'm affected by books that I've read and movies I've seen and experiences I've had. I saw the movie Precious, and after I saw that movie, it affected me so deeply that I finally came to terms with sexual abuse in my family. And I felt real rage at first, and I painted two paintings that really looked like rage. But I also created series on slavery and civil rights and war, and I'm interested in social injustice, so that comes out in my paintings.
Gloria Steinem once said women become more radical with age, and one day an army of gray-haired women may quietly take over the earth. And one of those women just might be Jean Baynes.
Do you feel like age gives you the power, the privilege, the right, to make social statements?
Yes, I do believe that. I don't know if I was younger, I would have done anything like that. I had to paint for many, many years to develop all these feelings that I could express on canvas.
Baynes has been painting since 1975, and her most ardent supporter from day one has been Raymond, her 95-year-old husband. The two have been married for more than 70 years, and they live alone in a house that Raymond built. He no longer builds homes, but he still makes the frames for Jean's paintings.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's nothing. My job was design engineer, and a frame for a picture is nothing. And I enjoy it. I enjoy woodwork. I built a house.
He's a great workaholic. He has slowed down now. He has COPD, and he has memory problems, but we're still managing. It's such a blessing to have family and friends that love you and care for you. And especially my art friends mean so much to me, because they're my closest friends.
Jean Baynes has never painted for recognition, but admits that this later in life attention feels pretty good.
This is just so overwhelming to me, because I just haven't had the opportunity to have all this attention and having videos taken and giving talks, art talks to everyone. So this is all just very exciting to me. It's going to take me a while to come down to earth, I think.
You know, unfortunately, as many of us age, our world shrinks and we become less inclined to take chances, to take a stand, and to use our voice. But others, like Jean, are liberated by age. Their lives expand, their voice is amplified, they defy the limited expectations of our culture, and they tell us all the time that my 80s and my 90s were actually the best decades of my life. How encouraging is that? If you'd like to see Jean's work, just visit Jean Baynes, that's JeanBaynes.com. Well, you know, folks, the key as we age is to not identify with loss and limitation, but to embrace possibility. So let me ask you this. What's more important, to think positive thoughts or to avoid negative thoughts? Well, positivity is important to be happy and healthy, and especially as we age, but avoiding negativity is even more important. In fact, 61 studies have now demonstrated that less pessimism is a more powerful predictor of better physical health outcomes than more optimism. Well-being is less about expecting the best, and it's more about not assuming the worst. We'll see you next time.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. chief audio engineer is Mac Dula, and our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, growing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming rope, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. So much older then, I'm younger than that now. Half-right prejudice leap for, rip down all hate I scream. Lies that life is black and white, spoke from my skull I dream. Romantic flanks of musketeers, foundation deep. So much older then, I'm younger than that now. In a soldier's stand.